Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster will look back in games against Hibs and Partick Thistle. We'll preview tomorrow night's fixture against St Johnstone and look ahead to the Scottish Cup fixture at Dens Park on Saturday. And we'll also have a brief recap of the eventful transfer deadline day again at Fir Park. Guys, how's it going?
Not too bad.
Good, mate, thanks.
Jay, I'll start with yourself and we'll look back. Going back to last Wednesday, a 2-1 defeat at Easter Road. It's always a difficult place to go, and it proved to be exactly the case on Wednesday night. Possibly left ourselves with too much to do, going down 2-0. Did manage to force our way back into the game with Curtis Main's very well taken goal, but ultimately it's a defeat, and the first league defeat of the year as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a really difficult place to go to. Anyway, Hibs are obviously in that sort of pack of four or five teams that are a fair distance away from everybody else. They're pretty much guaranteed top six football already. Easter Road's obviously notoriously difficult to go and get a result, even although we obviously managed earlier in the season getting a point thanks to Louis Moult. So it's always going to be tricky, particularly after the run we'd been on in December. I know we kind of eradicated that with the cup win against Accies, and then obviously the result against Ross County, but you know it was always going to be a tricky ask. But I thought we started reasonably well. I don't think it was is quite a bigger disaster as some kind of suggested on the likes of Steelman online. I thought we for the first maybe 20-25 minutes it was quite end to end. It looked as though we were looking to break quickly. I think that's why Chief perhaps didn't start on the Wednesday night. I kind of felt that a big part of our game plan was to maybe sit in and then try and counter and with a bit of pace, and obviously Chief's not that kind of player, and it did kind of work. I thought the first 20-25 minutes we competed well, we created some chances, and perhaps as always it was just that kind of final decision, that final pass or finish that kind of deprived us from maybe taking an early lead. Hibs obviously scored. I think it was a mistake by Charles Dunn. It could be argued he slips, but for me, he tries to, rather than just batter the ball out of the park the way he's facing out for a throw-in, he tries to be a bit cute about it and tries to clear it out of the box and up the park. It obviously goes straight to the Hibs boy and he finishes it. And from then on, I think that knocked the stuffing out a little bit. But at half-time, that's when you want to regroup. That's when you want to go out and try and take the game at Hibs. And to lose a goal so soon after half-time, I think that would have been the kind of game over at that point, because any enthusiasm or motivation that we had after the break, it's a lot of ball forward. Tate's caught out of position, the ball's squared and we're 2-0 down. And although we had that kind of fight back late on, and with a bit of luck, we did create chances, and with a wee bit of luck, we might have notched up another kind of very late point in Edinburgh, but it wasn't to be. I mean, but there's still positives there for me. I thought Kipre in particular was absolutely outstanding. Probably our best distributor of a pass or a through ball, which is saying something for a centre half. And obviously Curtis Main notched up another goal with a great finish. So a disappointing result, perhaps a disappointing spell, you know, between both goals, really. But I thought we started the game reasonably well, and it's not a kind of game that I kind of, you know, full time, I certainly wasn't overly disappointed.
Buster, I think that Jay's kind of summarised the main parts there. For me, it was quite a streaky performance. We were decent in spells and we were poor in others, but I think on the day we can't really have too many complaints that we came out in the wrong side of a 2-1 scoreline. That being said, games like the one at each at Hearts and competing again at Easter Road, we've taken a point from Easter Road already this season. That's encouraging, and these are the kind of points that do help set you aside from those teams scrapping out at the bottom of the league.
Well, you'd like to hope that would be the case, and you know, you say we've got a fairly decent points total up until what, November there, and you know, we've obviously been on this kind of rubbish run since. But you know, you say there's not much really you can argue about Jay says. Again, I think Jay's a bit more positive about the performance than myself, to be honest with you. I don't really see. I'm not really too sure about the sort of Grimshaw-Rose-Tate sort of rotation that was happening, where Grimshaw seemed to start at right wing-back and then they switched it across and Rose ended up at left wing-back and stuff like that. I don't know what was happening there. Tate was absolutely honking as well, to be honest with you. It's probably one of the worst games I've seen him ever have for ourselves. And, you know, I was quite critical of him about a year ago, whenever it was, when he was looking very suspect defensively then as well, but pardon me, sorry. But as you say, you know, you can't really go to Easter Road and expect to win. But it would have been a wee bit. If we'd managed to steal a point, then I think it would have been a bit of an injustice, to be honest with you.
And then we moved on to Saturday's game at home to Partick Thistle, a game I think collectively we've all really believed that it should be a game that we were going into with a positive mindset and one that we should have ended up winning. In the end, we didn't manage the 3 points either. Actually, a goal 10 minutes from time, sparing us our first defeat in 22 years at home to Partick Thistle. Jay, it was good in the sense he's Nadia Chiefji off the mark for the club. That was a positive in an afternoon that really didn't get going for us. I think we were the better side, but it was a really turgid affair. And I suppose in the end, you're just a bit relieved to actually get something from the game whatsoever.
Yeah, I think it kind of followed the same pattern of the, you know, the other home games we've had since the break. You know, Aki's and Ross County were both wins, but at times, you know, you were kind of coming away from the game wondering whether, you know, the positive result was less to do with how well we played and more to do with how poor the opposition were. And I thought it was the same on Saturday. I don't think we did anything particularly impressive. We created, you know, a lot more chances than Thistle. Some decent play at times, but all too often it was, you know, kind of turgid stuff, long balls. Bizarrely, the long ball game that we seem to play seems to focus on Craig Tanner, who's by far the smallest player on their team. Mm-hmm. And yet, the few occasions that we actually did try and play half-decent football or tried to get the ball down the flanks were when we actually created things. So it was quite a frustrating day. You know, obviously, I think we only actually got to see about 40 minutes of actual football, you know, due to about an hour being time-wasting. For Partick Thistle. So, I mean, I suppose it's one of those kind of double-edged swords. You look at the game to begin with, it's a game that I think we should have been looking to win. We didn't win, and that's disappointing. But on the flip side, you know, to go into those last 10 minutes and one goal down and to nick a point, I think, particularly based on the run we'd been on in December, it's still something. You know, it's better than nothing.
A huge boost, Buster, for Nadia Chiefji getting off the mark. I think his contribution has been largely positive since he's come in, but as a striker, you're there to obviously score goals. Curtis Main's managed to get off the mark very quickly. So for Chiefji to kind of follow in his footsteps there was a big plus point, and he took his goal fantastically well.
Yeah, he did. It was a very good goal. You know, he turned the defender made it look quite easy, maybe a wee bit of a lapse of the defender there, but as you say, stuck it away in the corner. It was good to see. He obviously enjoyed it as well. I've been a wee bit frustrated with him, and I've said that at the games. He looks a bit lackadaisical, but that's obviously, you know, the way he plays. When he gets the ball in at his feet, he looks as if he can actually do something with the ball. And then as I said to Jane Saturday as well, I said, you know, I don't think the fact that we're punting the ball from, you know, the front to the, from sort of the back to the front would really help somebody like Nadir Chifty either. But you say he really enjoyed it. He's been, as you say, mainly positive. The only issue I've got is how many times are we going to give ourselves that uphill battle where we go behind, whether it be, you know, three goals at Ross County, one at home at Partick Thistle, whatever. We seem to not be playing until the last, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of a game, and it's happened once too often for me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's a very valid point in terms of you go away from that game thinking it feels like 2 points dropped, but I suppose the bigger picture there is we were lucky to get a point in the first place because we just hadn't, it just didn't click together for the first 80 minutes almost whatsoever. I know there was the goal ruled out and there was one that perhaps looked like it had crossed the line. Even the TV footage I've seen has been pretty inconclusive there, but just I think we've got enough and we've got the players at our disposal as well to be, not to be running over the top of teams like Partick Thistle, but certainly going out there and dominating the game and winning with a bit to spare, but instead we're actually scrapping and almost kind of saving our blushes somewhat in games like that.
The whole going the long ball is a bit confusing to me as well, because as Jay says earlier in the game we spoke about on Saturday, we seem to be, you know, creating more chances and doing a lot better when we actually try and play some football. And it was similar again on Saturday, where we started with three at the back and we seemed to go 4-4-2 at one point, and it was at that, you know, that point where we seemed to actually come back into the game. Although we've sort of built our team around the three at the back and we've got the personnel in there for it, it's maybe worth looking at if we are maybe going to be better playing a 4-4-2 or something like that, because, you know, how many times this season have we again changed it at a certain point in the match? Maybe as we say, we're behind and we have to go for it, and, you know, we went four at the back or whatever. It seems to have worked a lot better at times, but it's just kind of frustrating that even in a Hibs game, but as Jay said, I thought we started kind of brightly, but we faded away, and then again it was the last 20-15 minutes that we actually started to, you know, come in and put Hibs under a wee bit of pressure.
Jay, I suppose the glass half full side of that argument is that we're never beaten. We scored a 96th minute goal against Hearts to take a share of the spoils at Tynecastle, then fast forward a week and we're scoring a late goal against Thistle to take a point. So the mentality there and the desire to fight to the end is clearly there, though.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously a massive part of the early part of the season. You know, we saw it on display a good number of times, up until, you know, our kind of that week that seems to have changed our season against Celtic. So it's good to see that's come back, because it was sadly lacking during those games in December. But, you know, as Buster says, one of the things that does also seems to have come back is that, or maybe not come back because we weren't particularly good in December anyway, but, you know, our early form did, you know, how often were we on here talking about how, yeah, it was another game where we might have went on and got a point or a win, but again, we'd spent the first 20, 30, possibly even 45 minutes not being in the game. And that does seem to be something that's maybe crept back in. So it's something that obviously needs to be watched. But you're right, I think, you know, having a team that don't know when they're beaten is obviously going to be a massive, massive thing, particularly as we go into these, you know, couple of months up into the split.
And the games continue to come thick and fast. Bust a home fixture against St Johnstone in the league tomorrow, and then followed by the Scottish Cup game at Dens Park on the Saturday. St Johnstone we'll discuss first, and that's always a very difficult game. Tommy Wright, perhaps not enjoying the same amount of success and the same amount of progress that his team have really enjoyed. He's done a fantastic job there. Struggling somewhat this season, but they still look like they'll have more than enough to stay up. And tomorrow night will be a very difficult encounter, no doubt about that.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I know they've not been at their best, or, you know, at previous levels, at levels they've previously shown, sorry, but I was still quite surprised to see that they were even still below us at this point. So I believe they've, so over our last, whatever, 10, 11 matches or whatever, we've only won once, and I believe they've won a couple of times more than that, so it's kind of surprising. But again, it's one of these matches where we should be looking at taking all 3 points as a home game against a team run about our level. So I think, considering, you know, the Partick Thistle result there, if we don't actually pick up 3 points, I think it could be considered a disappointing couple of days for us.
Yeah, Jay, that's it. I suppose we go into these fixtures, Thistle at home and St Johnston at home. I reckon, I think many of us would have targeted 6 points, but certainly 4 would have been the minimum requirement, or the minimum desire anyway. So that means that we've now got to win the, what on paper, certainly a harder game. It'll be a tough ask, and the turnaround obviously of 3 days as well. While it can build some momentum, it also can take effect where we've got a few players that look like they're still carrying slight knocks. The fixture congestion could become a wee bit problematic for us.
Yeah, and once again, it kind of makes a mockery of the whole winter break idea. You know, the fact that that's us back and already we're talking about congestion in terms of fixtures. But no, St Johnson's a winnable game, but it's I think it's easy, and I've been guilty of this as well, you know, recently, to kind of dismiss St Johnson a little bit because they've been so poor this season. But it's you know, it's in terms of context, they've been poor. They've been poor by St Johnson's normal standards. They're still only 3 points behind us with 2 games in hand. So, you know, they can very much, you know, a wee bit of turnaround in form, and they can very much be looking at, you know, trying to challenge for the top six very, very easily. So it's certainly not a game that we can take for granted. It's not a game that's going to be easy by any means. But it is a winnable game. And if we want to have any aspirations to clinch that, you know, sixth place spot by the split, which is obviously looking more and more difficult the better that Kilmarnock seem to get week on week, but if we want to have any aspirations to do that, then we need to be looking at winning games against the likes of Partick Thistle and St Johnstone at home.
That's something that I hadn't really thought about there, actually. You talk about how well Kilmarnock are doing, and it's almost considered disappointing for St Johnstone to be 3 points behind them in the table. So it is a real indictment that St Johnstone are almost a team that many teams around our level, Kilmarnock's, Partick Thistle's, possibly also aspire to be a St Johnstone and attain the levels of success that St Johnstone have achieved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look at the league table at the moment, and it's pretty much as you would expect, you know, Celtic, Aberdeen, Rangers, Hibs, Hearts. And then that kind of sixth place spot in the table is that kind of, you know, who is the better of the rest. And St Johnson, I think, would have been earmarked for that from the start. So you're right, again, it's all to do with context. It's easy to look at St Johnson and say, well, they're doing really badly this season. That'll be an easy 3 points. But, you know, they're actually not. I mean, they're doing badly by St Johnson form or standards, but they're still breathing down their necks. And if they were to win those 2 games in hand, they'd be ahead of us regardless of what happens tomorrow night.
How did they actually end up with games in hand as well? I mean, I kind of remember, at one point it was us with the games in hand due to the fact, you know, we had games moved for semis and cup finals and stuff, and suddenly, as you see, I'm looking at the league table, I can see Kilmarnock, St Johnston, even Hamilton have all played less games than us. I don't understand what happened there, to be fair.
I can see the game cancelled over Christmas, but that aside, I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. It was Aki's Kilmarnock that was cancelled on the plastic pitch, ironically. But I'm not 100% sure. I don't know whether maybe St Johnstone have got a fixture against Celtic or something like that to play, due to, I don't know, a European game or something like that. I don't know. Well, look at the transfer window just before we move on to be joined by Johnny McFarlane and Keith Lasley for the podcast, where we'll focus on the Rangers and Celtic Colts sides entering the Scottish Football League structure. Transfer window summary, I suppose, as we closed in on deadline day, Stephen Hendry joining on loan from Southend. We unfortunately failed in our pursuit of another striker. It seemed to go right down to the wire, only to end with some issues at the hands of the parent club, not being able to fulfil their end of the deal. So that was a bit disappointing. Jay, we'll look at the impact Curtis Main has had so far. Nadia Chiefji getting off the mark on Saturday. Stephen Hendry comes in with certainly a fair degree of pedigree, and he was a player that was very highly regarded when he was at Hamilton. Got a move to West Ham. It doesn't quite seem to have worked out for him, but from his interviews since he's come back, he's clearly here to make an impact and to perhaps prove some of the doubters wrong after failing to hit the heights down south. So I think overall, putting the disappointment of missing out another striker, which would have been pretty handy, certainly after losing Alex Fisher, but we can be fairly satisfied with our business, I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the missing another striker may or may not come back to haunt us. It's something that we can only really talk about in hindsight. If, you know, both Chiefji and Main continue, now Chiefji's off the mark and Main's obviously scored three already. If they continue to do that and stay clear of suspensions and injuries, then we'll look back at the end of the season and not be particularly bothered that we missed out on a striker. But the same token, you know, injuries, suspensions can take their toll, and we might be struggling there because we certainly don't seem to have, other than George Newell, MD really, you know, Petra doesn't really appear to be a striker. Tanner certainly isn't. It's not really a good position to be in. So obviously we just need to keep our fingers crossed in that regard. In terms of Hendry, I think that's a good signing. I'll be honest, there's not a great deal I can remember of him at Aki's. I don't know, you know, just how much opportunity he's had down south. I don't follow English football. But, you know, in terms of on paper, it looks like a decent enough signing. We need cover on that side. We've certainly got that. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And it's one of those signings as well where you look at, and I suppose to a lesser degree, the Chiefji one as well. You know, if things go to plan and they settle and you know, things work out well, then you never know what might happen beyond the summer.
Yeah, it's the Stephen Hendry one, like you say. Gee, I don't know, I remember much about him, but I don't know, you know, if he was injured or something on Saturday there as well, but he had a strange sort of debut where, you know, he seemed to be a wee bit jittery and then he just went off at half time and was never seen. So I don't know if he was injured or something.
He got a knock.
Yeah.
He was kind of caught by an arm. I think it was actually by our own player midway through the first half. And I don't know whether it was maybe a precaution that it might have been a concussion or something like that, but he certainly looked pretty shaken by it almost. He definitely got a knock and looked a wee bit out of sorts after that. So yeah, hopefully he'll be back ready for tomorrow night. But certainly it's also interesting to see him getting the number 3 jersey as well, which is certainly a big jersey to fill after the many years that Stevie Hamill's given to us and performed so well in that jersey. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Another big talking point of deadline day was Celtic's move for Trevor Carson. Something that didn't come to fruition in the end. Two bids knocked back from Celtic. And it was really pleasing, Buster, to see the club hold so firm. Celtic, with their financial might coming in at the last minute with two derisory bids. So difficult to replace a goalkeeper. We've talked in previous seasons when we've had guys like Craig Sampson in goal, and quite often having a poor goalkeeper can cost you in so many ways. And there's possibly no coincidence that when we've had a poor goalkeeper between the sticks, our league position has also suffered as a direct result of that. So it was very important to keep a hold of Carson, and the club clearly backed themselves and stood firm, which was excellent to see.
It was, yeah. And even, you know, as you say, there was two reported bids, but I think Stevie Robinson said in one of his pressers, you know, there was one bid, the rest of it seemed to be fed to the media, you know, and that was where that was coming from. So again, Stevie Robinson appears to be only aware of one bid there. But as you say, Trevor Carson is a great goalkeeper, and when you see the standard of, well, not so much a standard, but, you know, when you see Craig Gordon with the ball at his feet and his crosses. I don't think I've got any doubt that if he was given a run in, if he went there and he was given a run in that Celtic team, I think he could have became their number one pretty easily. The only issue with that being, you know, maybe not being a big enough name for them or whatever. But as you say, it's absolutely magic that we managed to keep hold of him. And you know, as the manager says as well, I've no doubt that he'll be knocking on the Northern Ireland international scene door as well. So good to actually, you know, see that he's still here. And it was also good to see that you ignored the fact we finished second in the league with Lee Hollis in goals.
That was all down to Gunnar Nielsen for me. JRs, and we possibly should get this out the road before the online Daily Record journalist joins us, but some pretty naughty journalism, in the sense people, Buster talked about the media stirring things up with the Keith Jackson story about how Trevor Carson was heartbroken not to be given his move. We don't know for certain, but there seems to be a bid that appears to have been fabricated as well. That certainly doesn't help, and it can obviously cause issues for the player as well. You don't want him to be distracted to that extent, particularly when the interest might not be to quite the extent that the media let us believe.
Yeah, I mean, it was pathetic. I don't know how much you know, it is sort of planned by the likes of the media and the Old Firm. You know, whether it is as much of a conspiracy as it appears, but it does seem to just fit that age-old story of want a player, want him in the cheap, bid rejected, unsettle him by putting some, you know, terrible story in the news about heartbreak and all that kind of stuff. It just fit that model perfectly. And it was pathetic. You know, at the end of the day, Celtic are by far the biggest and richest club in Scotland. If they get an injury to their goalkeeper late on in the transfer window and they want to replace him with quality, they need to go and pay for it. The kind of underhand you know, tactics of you know, using the already pathetic and media bias you know, standard of journalism in Scotland anyway, to use that to your advantage the way they did, I think was quite telling. But you know, the club deserves great credit for standing up to it, and as does Trevor Carson. You know, the idea that somebody put you know, quotation marks around the word heartbroken, and suddenly that means that, you know, Trevor Carson was up all night crying, I think was a lot of nonsense. And when you actually look at, you know, he's not maybe had a great deal to do since that story. You know, obviously straight into the starting lineup at Easter Road, and then again playing again on Saturday, but it certainly doesn't seem to have affected him in any way.
And just a final one on the transfer window, a game on the evening of the window just seems utterly ridiculous, and again makes a bit of a mockery of the winter break there. Your teams are having to wait late in the day to get loan deals over the line. Celtic, obviously, their issue where their main goalkeeper's injured. They don't apparently have enough faith in their second choice goalkeeper, Doris de Vries, so they're scraping about trying to get someone in at the very last minute. For Trevor Carson, he had the, I suppose, quite a unique situation where he could have potentially actually played in that game, distracted on Wednesday night, and then signed for Celtic afterwards if the bid had been improved to the level, which I think we all know that Celtic were never going to get near to. But it's a bit unfair to put these obstacles in players' ways, as far as I'm concerned. And given that it's this one night of the, well, two nights of the year, it just seems ridiculous that you're going to have clashes with both fixtures being played and the window shutting.
Well, again, as we've mentioned a few times already, it completely makes a farce of the whole break. I mean, the Hibs game is one of the games that was postponed because of the cup, was it not, or am I making that up?
No, Hibs was just a midweek schedule last week.
Well, that's even worse then. Sorry, I thought we were only playing because we had a postponed game. Sorry, but
there was some again, games put off again there though, because you had cup replays and cup postponements. Mm-hmm. So it's just.
And again, as you say, we took, what is it, 3-4 weeks off there at Christmas, well, at New Year, sorry, for no reason whatsoever. I don't understand it, to be honest with you.
Well, guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got in terms of recapping the Motherwell news. What we'll do is we'll invite Keith Lasley and Johnny McFarlane into the conversation, and then we're going to have a half hour, three quarters of an hour on the Colts setup and introducing them into the Scottish League structure. So we'll take a couple of minutes and then we'll be back with that. Well, after recording our Motherwell-focused podcast there, we're now delighted to welcome along Johnny McFarlane from the Daily Record and also Keith Lasley for a debate on the proposed move to bring the Colts teams from Rangers and Celtic into the Scottish League structure. Firstly, guys, welcome along.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, cheers, Andy. Cheers.
This has clearly been an issue that has divided Scottish football fans, and it's been quite a lively debate already. But still, I think there's a lot of meat to be put on the bones, and there's a lot of unanswered questions, I suppose, Johnny. What is your initial stance on it, from what you know?
Well, I think you have to look at the... separate it out, first of all. You have to say, do I believe that Colts are generally a good idea? That's the first part. And then the second part would be, do you believe in this current proposal? And I suppose I would be in the first camp. I think that if you talk to any footballers, I'm sure Keith will talk about this, often they'll come back and say that the big problem that we have in our game at the moment is age 17 to 21. The young players don't have enough competitive football. And often players growing up back in the day and previous generations would have got a lot of that and played against men in the reserve leagues. And we don't have that now. So it's about how we give that to those players. And I believe the Colts is a good way to do that. However, if you look at the proposal, as I'm sure we'll go into, there's many issues with it, there's many holes in it, and there's a lot of room for discussion. And I think going forward, it'll need to be a much wider debate over a longer period of time than trying to force this through this season, as they have done.
Keith, that's what stands out for me, I suppose, that this isn't something that's going to be introduced over a long period of time. The plan is to railroad this right through to start beginning next season. It seems quite often in Scottish football that proposals, even the ones that do have their merits, are almost rushed and kind of forced through rather than actually taking some time and deliberating the best way to introduce it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you may have a point there, Andy. Yeah, I mean, I agree with Johnny in the first part of his answer in terms of the idea of it as a whole. You know, the name, first and foremost, I'm not too sure about. I think yourself and Busta and Jay have spoken about this before. The Colts is certainly, I don't know if they could work on that for a start. Change that would be a first point. But the actual idea behind it and introducing these young boys into competitive football, which I think is the big issue here, and I think one that would bring on our players. I mean, we've had experience of it ourselves at Motherwell through the Iron Brew Cup. And, you know, you asked Stephen Craig and myself, who was involved in it last year, and just the intensity surrounding those games, the build up, the little bit of media attention that players got, the training, the intensity in training, everything was just stepped up a notch in the week building up to those games and in the games themselves. Anybody that went along to the matches and, you know, the wonderful experience you had this year, you know, albeit ultimately losing over at Crusaders, the chance for these boys to go and you know, play over there and a game that meant something, and that is the big thing for me, playing these young boys playing in meaningful football. And I know I take the point of you know, that these boys getting that in a sense in the old reserve league, but to me, that is actually a little bit of a red herring in this whole thing of the reserve league. You know, that going to have a massive impact on the development of younger players going forward. And I actually don't think it will. I think actually the introduction of some sort of B teams, Colt teams, whatever you want to call them, and you know, the more exposure through Iron Brew Cup, that sort of football. And obviously the loan system is a far greater, you know, has a far greater learning curve and a far steeper learning curve for these young boys than reserve team football, albeit with a few extra, you know, older pros thrown in. I still don't think that has the same effect as these young boys playing in meaningful football. And, you know, I think, as you say, the principle is correct. The implementation, without, I've not had a a real look into it with this implementation with the Rangers-Celtic teams getting put in from next year. You know, I'd probably have to have a closer look myself, but certainly the principle, the whole thing, I do agree with, and it's, you know, it's just getting that implementation of it right, really.
Keith, the, you look at the Motherwell squad just now, and there is a lot of guys out on loan. There's guys that have certainly in the past, I think Chrissy Cadden's possibly the prime example of someone that was loaned out to Albion Rovers, and it clearly kicked his career on to the level that he needed to be at. Yeah. The loan market is something that's used across the board in the Premiership and even in the Championship in Scotland. So why is this not providing the football or the competitive football they need? Is there a need for these Colts sides to exist when you've got the loan market?
Yeah, no, listen, the loan market certainly serves a, you know, it's a great purpose. As you say, we've had, you know, great results from doing that. You know, actually, as recently as this week, we've sent Adam Livingston out on loan to East Fife, which we feel will be great for his learning. We feel as if Adam's got to a level like a lot of the boys do, as they've got to a certain level on under-20s football. And it's what can bridge that gap between under-20s football and us seeing them enough in decision-making football and in an environment where they're really making decisions that matter. And I don't mean that by demeaning under-20s football and that standard, because it obviously does still, you know, serves its purpose in developing the kids. But really, at that crucial age between 17 and 21, it is really their decision-making in a pressurised environment that a first-team manager will pay great attention to in terms of trusting the, you know, these young players to come into a first team environment. So they do get that out there. They do build, you know, they become young men even more in that, out of that comfort blanket of their own environment, getting out in the loan system. So there's no doubt that does work. But you know, from Rangers and Celtic point of view, if they go into that, if, you know, for instance, for our own club, it would be the equivalent of having sending all your boys out on loan at one time, you know, and you've got all your boys playing in that environment. So from Rangers and Celtic point of view, I can totally understand why they see this as a, from a purely selfish point of view, a great thing for them, that they, you know, they essentially have all their boys still within their club. They still train every day with them, but they are still getting that, you know, they are getting this football at the end of the week. So for their own development, I think it's great. Is that right, that it's just Rangers and Celtic getting their teams into the shoehorned into the league and nobody else is? Or, you know, is it the right implementation? I'm not sure, but I can certainly see from their own sense of how it makes sense to them and how they think it will develop their young players. And ultimately, from an SFA point of view, you know, I'm sure they see that this is, you know, again, we'll go back to it. Is it the right way to go about it? I'm not sure, but I think they see it as hopefully an acceleration of some of the best young talent to push it on at that crucial age group.
You make a good point about the loans, and a lot of people have discussed that and said exactly what you've asked. What, don't we have a system there at the moment? But the truth is, it's not working. It might be there, but it's not working. We haven't reached a national competition finals in 20 years. There is an issue with us, blood and young players. Under 16, under 17, under 19, we did pretty well. But after that, we struggle. And it's clear that it's about getting those players game time. So in an ideal world, yes, you put them all out on loan. But this is another and different way to develop those players. You can have some players that will develop out on loan. You can have some players that develop potentially in a Colts system. The Colts isn't a smoking gun. It's not the answer, but it's one part of a bigger picture. I suppose Project Brave is supposed to be that big picture. And I think it's important people don't say, well, oh God, you know, Colts aren't going to be the difference. Well, no, you're right. They're not going to be the difference. They're not the one thing. But for some players, they will be. I mean, you look at the facts and figures in terms of Germany. I've got them here. And in Germany, something like 84% of the players that were in the national team were in the Colts system in Germany. So it has worked in other nations as well.
Can I just add on to that, what Johnny's saying as well? It's interesting. I read really great arc about Pep Guardiola, you know, guys that have looked into this are maybe aware of it as well, but they obviously have feeder club now in Spain, in Girona, I think it's Girona, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but Pep actually has openly said that he doesn't even consider the boys in his own under-23s team for his first team. What they actively do now is actually send the ones that they feel have got a future, if you like, in the next, say, I don't know, whatever the timescale is, the next year or the 18 months, and they send them out to play at Girona because they're actually using feeder clubs. Not their own, because they're obviously not got to that stage in England either of having B teams or coach, which Pep's been used to at Barcelona and Bayern Munich. That's what they actively do is send their better ones out to their feeder clubs. Now again, that's something entirely different. Again, having a tie up with a totally different club, and certainly something I can't see happening soon in Scotland. But certainly it shows that top managers at top levels are still, England have certainly got problems in their under-23 system. I know from ourselves, going down to look at matches and games, even at that level, looking for players ourselves, it is just played at a different intensity and a different, the meaningless to the games is just shines through in the tempo and the way the games are played. So, you can understand why even clubs the size of Manchester City and teams like that are looking for different ways to develop their own young players.
Guardiola's calling for B teams in England. I mean, he's come out and directly said it. For exactly the same reasons that we're having issues here. I mean, England have got a strong national team, but they're still having problems in terms of getting English players game time in the Premier League. I think it's something like only 30% of players in the Premier League are English. So young players are having a nightmare down south.
Mm-hmm. Keith, for example, you just mentioned basically what's an advanced loan system with Man City and Girona or whoever it will be. Obviously, if they're sending out a young English player, half of the players in Man City's youth team aren't English either, for a start. But if they're sending out young players to these teams, they're going to be playing with guys who play in Girona, have got a bit of experience playing with the first team. Why is it going to be any different if, for example, the centre mid for Celtic under 20s plays with other centre mid for Celtic under 20s against Arran Athletic? Surely you learn more from the players you play with. I can understand there's obviously advantages to playing a competitive game and playing against people who play first team football, but surely you'd like somebody in beside them to teach them a bit of the game as well.
No, I understand, and I think it's joining me back to we spoke about at the start. This isn't the one thing is going to change the face of it, but I just think it's a better than what we've got at the moment. I think our young players, you ask Stevie Craig and you ask any coach within our club, and I think you go across the clubs at SPL, I honestly do, and would they prefer for their young players to play more football like they did in the Ironbrook Cup against the other lower league teams in a competitive game? And to me, that is the big thing, because we are getting footballers in. The reason you have your academy system is to produce, work on the techniques. So at the end, 15, 16, you're still working on techniques, but that crucial age group, it becomes working in a pressurised environment. That is where you've got the skills, you've got the tools, but it's using those tools under pressure. It's using those tools in games of football that matter, that mean something. And I think that is a big part of the kids' development, or not kids, young men's development at that age group. And unfortunately at the moment, they just don't get that in under 20 football. And it doesn't matter whether I went down and played with them as an experienced player alongside them. Would it help? Yeah, absolutely. But what I'm saying is, alongside that, I think there's got to be some change in the amount of competitive football that these young guys have to get. It has to take an upward turn for these guys to accelerate, and for first team managers to see them in that environment to ultimately get them into the first team.
Jay,
in my opinion.
Sorry, Keith. Jay, Johnny made an interesting point on the national side and the lack of progress on that front for many years now. For me, the interesting thing is, with Rangers and Celtic, despite having an abundance of players at their disposal, very rarely do Rangers and Celtic bleed their own youngsters and then provide them with the opportunities at first team level. They'll tend to go out and loan a player from Chelsea or Manchester City or look down south, when quite often it's been suggested that they should be looking at what's going on at Murray Park or what's going on at Lennox Town and giving these guys an opportunity. Celtic and Rangers being the figureheads for this seems very strange to me when they do have, while they have all the facilities and have plenty of opportunities to bring in young players, they very rarely do that.
Sorry, I'd agree with that. I mean, at the end of the day, I think proportionately, when you factor in all the different aspects concerned with youth development in terms of, you know, coaching standard, facilities, the amount of money you can chuck at it, Rangers and Celtic should be, you know, absolutely far and away the league leaders, and they're really not. I mean, you look at clubs like ourselves, like Dundee United in recent years, Hibernian. Those are the clubs who are bringing through the young players on a consistent level. And I think, you know, I think there's two debates here. There's obviously the whole general idea of whether Colts would be beneficial for youth development in Scotland. I think that's something that needs to be, you know, as has already been mentioned, it has to be debated at a fairly far, in a wider range. It has to be a long term consultation process. There needs to be a lot of investigation into how it would work. But the other debate is that the kind of proposals we've been faced with by Rangers and Celtic, and, you know, for me, they're largely mints. You know, you look at it, I mean, the idea for start is that Rangers and Celtic would go into League Two, but they too would be the only teams allowed to do it at the moment because they would meet the criteria set by Rangers and Celtic. You know, at the end of the day, that in itself just seems a bit of a joke. If we're going to set criteria for these kind of things, then success in blooding youngsters should be at the forefront. And Rangers and Celtic aren't at the forefront of that.
Is it not the criteria set by the SFA?
Well, I'm actually just quoting Chris McCart's comments regarding the idea that there has to be criteria, and the criteria would be, you know, basically the criteria that only Rangers and Celtic would actually meet.
I think what he's saying is he's talking about meeting the criteria in the time frame.
But I mean, obviously the time frame they've been given is next season. So I mean, everything regarding this proposal is designed so that it will only be Rangers and Celtic who can possibly take part in this, which is probably for the best at the moment, because obviously the plan doesn't involve any large-scale reconstruction of the lower leagues. All it actually entails is Colt teams joining League Two. If, you know, in a year or 2 years, Aberdeen, Hearts, Hibs and Motherwell decide to join in, suddenly we have a League Two of 16 teams, six of whom, you know, can't win anything, can't be promoted, can't be relegated. So I think, you know, someone made the point earlier about how it just seems to be rushed, and it absolutely does. You know, once again, it's that kind of thing where Rangers and Celtic seem to be running away with this idea that only really benefits them. And I think a lot of the rhetoric that's coming from it is really quite disrespectful, not just to, you know, the other teams who may wish to put forward Colt teams for the lower leagues, but actually the lower league clubs, and in particular the fans. You know, the idea, I saw, you know, it quoted that one of the benefits it will bring to League Two will be fan excitement. You know, this idea that fans of League Two clubs are kind of starved of excitement because they're not watching top flight football, but suddenly, you know, under 20s in Celtic shirts who they've never heard of will suddenly ignite the passion for the game. I think the whole thing is kind of in that bubble that we're kind of so used to in the top flight in Scotland. And I think that's what largely puts me off these proposals at the moment. I think it's a non-starter in terms of how they're being put across at the moment. Although I completely accept that the Colts idea, you know, probably has legs, but it is definitely worth a lot more investigation than it's currently getting.
Listen, in terms of the Old Firm, there's no doubt that Rangers and Celtic, but particularly Rangers' record in the last 20 years of youth development has been abysmal. I mean, I struggle to name a striker in the last 20 years that Rangers have produced at a decent level. I don't know if anyone can give me a name. Maybe Ross McCormick, but apart from that, there has been no one, which for a club the size of Rangers and the amount of money they're pumping into youth development is extremely poor. I think they have started to address that, though, at Rangers, and Celtic certainly are starting to bring through a few more youngsters into the team. But realistically, you have to look at the geopolitical trends in football just generally. As the big clubs are getting bigger, it's more and more difficult across the board for young players in these teams. That's a big picture. But in terms of what you're saying regarding the Old Firm and them being a problem. I totally agree. I don't think this is going to get off the ground until it's more than just Rangers and Celtic. If we genuinely are serious about youth development in this country and bringing through players for the national team, which I think we absolutely should be, this needs to be four or six clubs who are providing Colts, so that we can really make sure that everyone is feeling the benefit of this. And it can't just be for, or it certainly shouldn't just be for the Old Firm, which is why I think these proposals and the rush to get these proposals pushed through it ultimately will fall short.
Busta, I suppose another element of this now is Stuart Regan leaving his post last week. There's possibly not there's not anyone there just now to carry the infrastructure out and push it on. The plans, do you think that a kind of halt of progress here needs to be done first and foremost to actually slow the process down? Let's actually be a bit more methodical and not try and rush it through like so many other failed initiatives have been.
Well, we mentioned it earlier when we were talking, we says, you know, Project Brave was the thing that was supposed to be the saviour of Scottish football, you know, the up-and-coming prospects were, that was supposed to be part of that. And suddenly, you know, Brian McClure starts that, he suddenly is out of job, you know, he leaves to go to another job, whatever he went to. Malky Mackay takes over. Malky Mackay then leaves to become the Scotland manager. Stuart Regan's now away. I don't actually think they know their ass for the elbow up there anyway, to be fair, but it's I'm not really a big fan of this in general because, as I say, it's all over, you know, as you said, it's all over the place, and until they can actually think about sitting down and having a serious, you know, maybe 2 or 3 year plan implementing this, I don't think it's going to work at all. So I think they need to, it's been said, Scottish football fans have been saying it for years, you know, it needs, Scottish football needs turned upside down, and you know, if we're going to start, you know, trying to implement B teams and things like that, we might as well just start from the very top and just go right through the full system.
I would say though that is Scottish football being turned upside down, but Scottish football fans don't like Scottish football being turned upside down. This is what happens when we call for strong leadership, for new ideas. Quite often in Scottish football they're rejected because people don't like change. So while I agree with you, and I'm sympathetic to a lot of the points made, I do feel that ultimately it's a very difficult thing for the SFA to get change pitched through.
I think I don't actually disagree with you there, to be fair, but I think, you know, these, as we've basically said, these things need to be sat down and spoke about and thought through rather than just saying, do you know what, fuck it, Celtic and Rangers have got decent enough to know, let's just force them in the beginning of next season.
I think, I mean, obviously, Buster, you mentioned there about Project Brave. I mean, I think, obviously, we've spoke about it at length in the podcast. We've obviously had Alan Burrows on, and, you know, there's been quite extensive chat about it. A lot of kind of cynicism and doubts regarding it and how it was going to work. Obviously, for a long period of time, we weren't even sure if we were going to be in the elite level. I think that after all that, I mean, it seemed to drag on for so long. There was news story after news story. As you said, you know, there was people coming and going. It's been a long time coming, so eventually we get to a point where here's the requirements, here's who meets the requirements, here's who's going to be in what division. Everything seemed to be all set up, and then instantly Colt teams. It doesn't really, you know, say a lot for Project Brave for me. You know, it kind of exacerbates the doubts because it's like, well, why are we not at least giving Project Brave, you know, the year or two or a couple of years to see if all the work that's went into it starts to come to fruition? Why is it instantly Project Brave is going to be in place and then suddenly there's another idea?
This is an aspect of Project Brave.
It was just, if you're, obviously we've spent all this time to find out who's going to be elite level in the division of who's going to be playing each other. If you're in the Colts, if you have a Colt team in League 2, who is playing in the elite league? Are you playing in both?
I presume so, yeah. I mean, for me it makes sense to have the elite teams should have Colt teams. Is that not the obvious solution to this?
But we don't make decisions.
The big issue in actually awarding elite status to certain teams and not others is a bit of a minefield as well. When you've got teams like Dundee United and Falkirk have got a history of developing young players and giving them an opportunity. It seems that it's cutting off your nose to spite your face to then not award them that status. It seems very unfair, actually. But then we kind of carry on. Now we've got the Colts sides along with being in the league structure as well. It's, for starters, it's just very, very confusing.
I think from my point of view, you know, being in at the club while this project Brave has evolved, and I think that's what it has done and has continued to do, is that I don't think it was ever a set plan right from the start. As in, I think it has something that, through consultation with the clubs and as time goes by, I think it is something that is quite fluid, to be honest. I think it is something that has changed. I think there's been original ideas that have then been slightly tweaked here and there. I think that will actually continue to be the case all the way through until it's, you know, it's implementation into you know, the different age bands now with the 18s and the different structures that it brings and the league itself. So I actually think it'll be something that has evolved, or is something that has evolved as the months have went on and the weeks have went on. Quite literally, it changed from not week to week, but certainly something that has moved about. And as I said, I can see that continuing, you know, all the way through, really. So it's not as if we've had something. Malky Mackay's had A, B, C, D, E, right, there you go. That's exactly what's happening right from the start. I think, as I said, through consultation and a lot of discussion with every club and at all levels, it's kind of evolved, to be honest, and it looks to me as if it's going to continue to do that.
Johnny, this...
Sorry, carry on.
No, on you. This is an idea, obviously, that's divided the clubs as well, particularly the lower league clubs. Peterhead and Stirling Albion have been very vocal and been against it. Speaking to a coach at Stenhouse Muir, who says that he believes it's a fantastic idea and is very positive about the proposed introduction of it, certainly. You've got the issue with 250 guaranteed tickets straight away from visits of Rangers and Celtic. Do you think this is something that Rangers and Celtic fans, discounting for just a second the fans of the teams in League One and League Two, is this something that the Rangers and Celtic fans are going to get behind? Because if not, it's still creating, while there's animosity and doubt between the fans of these lower league sides, if the Rangers and Celtic fans then don't buy into it as well, a proposed boycott from some of these sides, it could just end up with players playing in front of two men and a dog, just like the Development League.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the danger. I mean, what we're talking about here, I looked at some of the numbers in terms of League 2. The average attendance so far this season is 472. So it's not a huge amount of people, and the total average per week is about 4,741. So it's important to put that into context. We're not talking about going from 2,000 a week here. That's not to diminish the way these guys that go along every week feel about their club. But I do think there's a bigger element at play to something like this, which is the overall good, the greater good of Scottish football. I'm a big supporter of the national team, always have been. So for me, I want to see a competitive national team. And I've not been able to see my country perform at a World Cup or a European Championships in my adult years. I was 16 in 1998, and you know, I managed to sneak into the pub to watch the World Cup. But that's my memories of it. So I'm very passionate about what we can all do as a footballing community to help improve our young players. And I think we do that through a number of ways. And this is just one of them. I do take on board that it's potentially difficult for Division 2 sides in terms of its change. But I was speaking to the football editor of the Daily Record today about this. He said absolutely there'd be increased media coverage. We'd be sending people to cover Rangers and Celtic's Colt games. We'd be doing live blogs. It'd be something we'd be desperate to get involved with at the paper, certainly on the website, if not the paper. So I do believe it would bring added commercial opportunities, definitely media attention, and I've had that straight from the horse's mouth. And I do think if it was marketed properly, that Rangers and Celtic fans would attend at those levels, 250 tickets. Definitely think so. Now, I know what the thing will be thrown back at me on my opinion on that, which is the Challenge Cup has not been a success in that sense, but the Challenge Cup games are not marketed. I don't believe that the Rangers Celtic support really have an understanding of when those games are or where they'll be played. I think if this was a set thing that was in place, I believe that there would be interest. It's not that long ago, Keith will remember this, that Rangers were getting 30,000 for a reserve game at Ibrox. I think that was a Rangers versus Celtic reserve game, Ian Durant's return, but it was not uncommon for Old Firm matchups in the reserve league to get 15,000-20,000. So there is an appetite, or there certainly has been historically, for second string football at that level, and I do believe that there would be an interest in it. I think in terms of the sporting integrity aspect, that's a more difficult one. I think there is definitely an argument to say that they should go down to the Lowland League. They should not be starting at League 2 level. That's unfair. That's grossly unfair, in fact, and I would be dead against that. If these Colt teams want to come in, they need to go in at the bottom of the pyramid and work their way up. Yeah. From a point of view of sporting integrity, that would just be a must. So this starting at League 2 for me, I wouldn't countenance that. It's important that they start at the bottom.
Another interesting idea for me would be actually to add that to the pyramid. You know, as it would be any way of adding the Colts League to the pyramid itself. You know, so that it would actually make the league amongst the teams themselves, the development teams, competitive. You know. So the winner of that league would then, be it through a playoff or through a promotion structure, be promoted into the league itself, and then that would include all the Colt teams or all the development teams, because we would all have a chance to get promoted into it, if you like. You know, I don't know whether that, I mean, that's just an idea that's come into my head, but it's finding a way, as you say, so that it doesn't seem as if they're just being parachuted in at the kind of. Well, the League Two, you know, they've earned some sort of right to be there as well, you know. So, yeah, again, it's probably all these things that have to be sort of ideas that need to be looked at. And as you say, right at the top of the programme, we're talking about, you know, it seems a little bit of a rush, but, you know, certainly from my point of view, it's still a. However, we end up getting there, I think it is the right direction of traffic.
What I think you said there's maybe a. Pretty decent suggestion there, Keith, to be honest with you, because one of the weird aspects of this I thought was, you know, they can go in and play in that league, they can't get promoted or relegated, so if they finish 1 and 2, you know, the third person will go up, just shit like that. I mean, I don't know much about, you know, Spanish B teams, but I know that they kind of be in the same league, so even if, for example, you know, when it came out and it came up that way, there was a promotion and relegation sort of thing, if it came out and, you know, say, Dundee United, where their B team was in the league below or whatever. I don't think there's any problem with doing that, but I think the main issue for me here appears to be just, you know, taking it for the beginning of next year and just throwing in Rangers and Celtic. It needs to be looked at, and it needs to be done properly, and I don't think it has been.
It does throw up an issue as well, doesn't it, that while Rangers and Celtic's Colt teams, and I really wish we could change this name, because it's paining me to say it every time I say it. What happens to the rest of us? We're all kind of left behind. They've propelled Rangers and Celtic in. And don't get me wrong, that's because Rangers and Celtic meet these requirements. But what do the rest of us do while they've buggered off to League 2, the Development League? Is that another nail in the coffin for the Development League, Keith?
I don't know, really, is the honest answer. You know, I dare say our policy would pretty much stay the same. We would try and develop our players through the loan system as effectively as we could. Well, you know, obviously I'm sure looking at the idea of maybe getting involved in the cult structure, if you like, and trying to get a team in ourselves. But no, listen. Again, I don't know. I don't. You know, that is the honest. I don't really know what it would mean for the under 20s league. I don't know what it would. You know, how it would leave that. But you know, I think again, going back to what Johnny said earlier, the interesting point for me is the kind of greater good against you know, everybody's club's own self-interest. You know, I think that's always been at the core of a problem in Scotland, is our Scottish Scotland fans, as in, you know, which we all are on here, I'm sure, and willing to let Rangers and Celtic try and develop better younger players for the greater good. You know, whether they get into their own first team or not, or whether they end up in a Motherwell first team or a Hamilton first team or a first team in England somewhere, you know, is that development still worthwhile for these, you know, good young Scottish players, albeit only at Rangers and Celtic at the moment? And you know, I suppose that is the wider debate. Would it be better if there was other clubs involved? Absolutely, but you know, I don't know if it's looking as if that's going to be likely, certainly initially, but you know, back to your original question, I think the answer is I don't know. It would be a case of suck it and see, I think, and see how it went. Well, you continued with your own policy of trying to develop your own players as best you can.
It's important. Sorry, I was just going to say, it's really important to remember that it is just a pilot. You know, it's a 2-year pilot, so you get an opportunity to see how it works. And I think quite often, again, there's a reluctance just to try things. You know, it might not be very good. I mean, there was a lot of reluctance with regards to the Challenge Cup, and people said, you know, it's not going to be very good. And, you know, they were absolutely right. You know, it's not very good with these Welsh teams and the Irish teams and all the rest of it.
But that was for our boys playing against them, though, Johnny. That's the big thing. You know, I was a bit disappointed with some of the coverage that I got, because, you know, were the crowds great? Nah, possibly not. Was it, you know, could it have been better? Was it, you know, a bit, we spoke to Bust about this on, and the guys, Jay, and on the podcast about, you know, when did the Welsh teams come in and when did the Irish teams come in? And, you know, nobody knew. You know, is it the fourth round or third round? It was all about, you know, they were asking me, we were in it, and I didn't know, you know, so it was one of them. But I still maintain that the couple of games or three or four games that we've had in that competition over the last 2 years, as, you know, the development that the kids got out of their games alone were probably as much as they got out of 8, 9, 10 under 20s development games, you know. So I do think it has served a purpose, and I do think there is still some legs in that. Maybe not for the clubs, the low league clubs, or but for the development of young Scottish players, it is, and it does serve a purpose. And I think that's where, you know, on the face of it, commercially, or you know, it may not look great, but I can tell you for one, that certainly for the young player at Motherwell, it was a very good experience.
Yeah, I think. Sorry, I should clarify. I did mean in terms of the fans' reaction to the Welsh teams and the Irish teams.
Yeah,
the fans I've spoken to seem to have not liked it. But I read Stephen Craigan was talking to Gordon Waddle in the Daily Records last week, and he was saying that four young players came and asked them about a move away on loan after they played against Crusaders, because they were saying, this has made me realise that I want to get out and play, you know, men's football.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I see the difference.
Just in terms of the actual pilot, if we're going to be doing, you know, conducting a pilot with two cult teams in the lower leagues, I think one thing that tends to perhaps put off, you know, the likes of myself and perhaps other non-Old Firm fans is, you know, you read about it and you just kind of roll your eyes and go, oh, here we go again, you know, Rangers and Celtic. I mean, we're talking about, I understand why they're the two teams with, you know, all the resources, all the facilities, etc. But I think I'm right in saying that, you know, Hibs and Aberdeen are currently at the top end, you know, the top of the development league. Celtic are sitting ninth, and Rangers don't even want to be involved in it. So, you know, if we're going to be sending two teams down as early as next season as a trial, let it be the top two teams in the development league rather than this kind of shoehorning of Rangers and Celtic, who we've already said haven't contributed anywhere near as much as they should have anyway in terms of youth players.
It's certainly an interesting one, and thank you very much, Keith, for confirming that we don't know what we're talking about and a variety of issues there.
Well, I did include myself in that as well.
That's an interesting one, actually, using the development league as a pathway to the cult system. Would that maybe enhance the competitive edge and the meaning of these development games? Because it must be tough on a Tuesday going up to Montrose to play Aberdeen, and what is a nothing game unless you're at the top of the table or you're doing well?
Andy, I've spoke to you know, Craig's about this a few times. There is some merit in that, or a lot of merit in that, because you absolutely hit the head with that. The boys went up in a fantastic win 2-1 up at Montrose, but it's just if that game, for instance, say that game meant that they moved up into, you know, a playoff place or a second place in the league, you know, there would just be so much more meaning behind the game itself, so much more meaning in every decision that they boys had in that game. So, you know, I'm not saying that they don't have pride and they want to win every game and they want to do their best. No, that's exactly, that's not what I'm saying. But you add that competitive element and all of a sudden the training and the build up to it, everything around that game just becomes so much more important for the coaches, for the players. You know, it's just, it would just add so much. And I think trying to do that, to make that reserve league, whatever it's going to end up, more competitive, as well as this coach idea, is, you know, is certainly an interesting idea to look at, and something again that I think, and you know, one thing's not going to change the face of Scottish football. I think we've got to look across the board. This coach thing, as I said, I think we're all in agreement there is some merit in it. It's just trying to get it right, you know. Can we make this the youth games more competitive, have some sort of carrot at the end of it, at least to try and make it more? Can we get more, you know, the Iron Brew Cup in terms of development? That, so it's all these things, trying to go through them all and trying to just improve, you know, incrementally all these different areas. And if we do that, then, you know, hopefully at least we're on the right road to producing, you know, more good young players ultimately for the national team.
I think that, to be honest with you, Keith, you've had the best idea of the night. Try and introduce the development league, or, you know, whatever it's going to be, the Colts or the B teams, whatever, get their league introduced into the pyramid system. I think it was on Saturdays at Fir Park we were talking about a programme somebody had watched in regards to the juniors, or was it maybe yesterday, me and you, Jay, when we were in the motor? And, you know, I don't see the Lowland League, you know, being full of ex-junior teams and things like that. You know, the junior league over the years had contributed quite a lot to Scottish football. So if you can get the B teams in a sort of system like that, mm-hmm, coming through. I think, to be honest, you've cracked it there, Keith.
I'll just take 5% of all commercial deals then, right? Can we get that in writing?
Well, do you know what? They're actually looking for somebody to replace Reagan. That's what I'm saying.
You've got the experience of also being involved that set up as a coach. Is there players potentially been lost to boredom in Scottish football? Is that lack of competitive edge kind of taken, even kind of through whispers more than anything else? I've heard of some young boys, even at Fir Park, who lost a bit of their appetite for the game because they weren't playing in the first team. They were playing in these 20s games where there wasn't much at stake, and you can maybe just lose that competitive edge and that desire. I know being a professional footballer is a hugely privileged position and something that many take very, very seriously, and rightfully so, but is there that lack of competitiveness maybe beginning to ruin some players, I suppose?
I think it can have an effect. I think if we played our games at Airdrie for, you know, the last couple of years, and, you know, is it the most inspiring place to go and play your football?
No.
It's great that the fans that do come along and support the lads, absolutely fantastic, and, you know, hopefully, you know, to encourage, you know, more fans to do it if we can. But, you know, obviously the crowds aren't great, and actually it's not even anything to do with the crowds, it's the football itself, and as I said, the kind of non-competitive nature of it. And listen, I'm doing this probably sounding as if I'm certainly doing Craig's a disservice. That's nothing that I would want to do, because I work beside him for so long, and I know how passionate he is about it as well, and he does, you know, he the way he works with the players every day, how passionately he works with them every single day. And, you know, I know for a fact he would love nothing more for these games to have more meaning. But you're right, you know, there is some players there that have probably played, you know, a couple of seasons that just can't quite make that step into the first team. And there's just, maybe there is just that little spark missing, you know, they've just lost that little bit of appetite or love, whatever that, you know, whatever the word may be. I think, but is that across the board? No, probably not. But if you lose one or two, you're still losing one or two, you know, that you may not have lost. So again, anything that can flip that in its head, and any sort of system that can help in that regard is, you know, can only help in the overall picture. Absolutely.
For me, there's three types of of there's three aspects to being a footballer, and I say this with expecting Keith to hopefully won't laugh at me because he's got a lot more experience than I do in any of this, but the mental side, the physical side and the technical side, and for years and years I think Scotland have been pretty good at the mental and physical side, and we've been working a lot on the technical sides, and now I think we're getting to the stage where you look at the performance of the under-17s, under-16s, etc, etc, you're starting to see a lot more technical footballers, and I think we even see it coming through, the youngsters coming through at SPFL level are pretty good technically now, but I think what this looks to address, Keith, I don't know what you think, it's the mental and the physical aspects of the game that become much more challenging as you become a professional footballer. I think the mental side of the game is something that we're talking more and more about now, and you know, it's an extraordinarily taxing profession to be a professional footballer mentally, because you have to be really, really sharp, and you have to accept rejection, and you have to accept defeat, and that's very, very difficult. And to go from the youth environment where that doesn't really exist, that pressure doesn't exist, to the rigors of playing against men, where you're posed new questions mentally and physically, that is what develops players. That's how they come on leaps and bounds. Look at Kieran Tierney, the development he's made in the last 3 years.
Yeah, no, listen, absolutely. I, from my own experience, you know, I use myself, I obviously never went through an academy system, so I wasn't, you know, brought up in a certain club for X amount of years and then come in. You know, I obviously took a different route into football, and I developed on the job. You know, I developed that, probably a lot down to that is why my latter years were probably my better years, but I developed in that environment, in a man's environment. I'd you know, great experienced players round about me. That was in back in the reserved, you know, league days when you were playing alongside some really experienced campaigners. But the amount of young players that just do, I totally agree with you. As I said it earlier on, you get your technique, your academy to me is that technique. You know, you build that technique, you build, yeah, you physically as well. But the mental aspect, I think that, particularly at that crucial 17 and upward level, does come from, you know, a first team environment, be that at your own first team, somebody else's first team alone, or with this new idea of a coach's idea where you're getting that first team mentality, but with your own, you know, your own team, your own B team later, development team, but in a first team environment, because that is the last stage of your development. I'm convinced by it, and it's making decisions under pressure. It's like in any profession, you know, you can train to be something, but until you are in that position, you know, and learning experience of the job, I'm finding it myself just now, and the coaching side of things. I mean, I've been through my B licence, A licence, youth licence, pro licence. You know, I've been doing 10 years or 12, a dozen years of licences and educating myself as much as I can to go into this role. And I've probably learned more in 6 months in the role than I did in 10 years of courses. You know, and it's just, I think it's not, you know, it's not just football. Football is a profession, it is a skill, and it is, to me, that mental aspect of learning on the job under a pressurised environment is the learning curve. And that's why I go back to the reserve league of people seeing that as the, well, that's going to change things. For me, it's not. It is the pressurised environment, and that's what will make the learning curve for these young guys a lot steeper than it will in the non-competitive nature of a reserve league, regardless of how many experienced players are playing alongside them. You know, it's that environment that is the big, big difference.
Guys, I think we could safely say we could end up debating all aspects of this, and it would take us till this time next Monday. But I think what we'll do is we'll wrap it up there. There's obviously been five of us, unfortunately not in the same room, so I think the passions have meant that we've talked over each other at some points, but hopefully we have conveyed our various arguments and our passion for the subject on a whole. Keith, Johnny, thank you very much for taking the time out your evenings to come along and discuss this. We really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. And where do I apply for that SFA job, Buster? Who do I write to?
He's got to write you a reference first.
Aye. I'll look it up, mate, and send you along.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. My love. My love.
My lover, 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 I'm in paradise whenever I'm with you. My mind, my mind, my, 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 my mind, well, it's a paradise whenever I'm with you. Ride on, ride on. Well, I will ride on down the road, I will find you, I will hold you, I'll be there. It's long, long? Well, it's a mighty long road, but I'll find you, I will hold you, and I'll be there. From those other boys, but this time it's real. It's something that I feel it. I know you heard it from those other boys, but this time it's real. It's something that I feel it. If it feels like paradise running through your bloody veins, you know it's love fading away. If it feels like paradise running through your bloody veins, you know it's love fading away. My time, my time, well, it's a never ending helter skelter. We'll be out whatever the weather. My heart, my boom, boom, heart, it's a beat and it's a thumping, and I'm alive. I know you heard it from those other boys, but this time between, it's something that I feel it. I know you heard it from those other boys, but this time it's real, it's something that I feel. Me there.